Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Using my GI Bill taught me I can do anything. And seeing me graduate taught my daughter she can too. VA benefits cover tuition, housing, and supplies. Get what you earned. Visit choose.va.gov.
Not all veterans are eligible for the type or amount of benefits mentioned here.
I do have to give a shout out to the podcast, the Couch GM Pod.
Washington State coming off of a tough loss in Corvallis, 10-7 against the Oregon State Beavers, a team that hadn't beaten an FBS team since they beat Washington State last year. I mean, just a game that should not have been lost. You know, Jack Stevens' first missed field goal on the season comes with just over a minute left from 32 yards out. Dylan, we'll get some insight from you on there was a fan chirping at Jack Stevens all game, and that very well could have led to that miss. But we have a great show today. Ben Carlisle to come on to talk all things Louisiana Tech and preview the upcoming game in Pullman this weekend. Yet again, another first-time matchup between Washington State and the upcoming program here. So let's get it started. But first, I have my summary of what we just saw this past week.
Daddy, chill.
What the hell is even that?
I was texting Dylan all game. I was like, what are we even watching right now? It was just an awful game across the board. What are your initial thoughts?
Well, let's go back to what we saw after the game on Twitter, X, whatever the hell you want to call it, with Jack Stevens and a fan. Britton Ransford, former Coug Center contributor, owner of Butte Brand, he was at the game with his family. And this kid right here apparently is the reason Jack Stevens missed a kick. And I'm going to go into Britton's tweet here that he posted right after the game. He said, "I'm 100% confident that this kid in front of me played a significant role in the Beavs winning tonight's football game. Dude yelled at her kicker for four quarters, telling him he'll miss a kick. Truly impressive work. Wish our kicker didn't constantly engage. Our kicker spent more time chatting back and forth with this kid than he did kicking into the net. My mother-in-law spent the evening trying to tell him to focus on the game. Mr. Stevens was definitely thinking about Connor in section 129 when he stepped up for that chip shot." It's absolutely ridiculous. And looking at the video, that definitely happened. I mean, for you to engage with a fan at all during the game, let alone for four quarters, and to have him just get into your mind and set up shop and literally buy a house in your head is utterly embarrassing, especially for a freshman. I don't know if the coaching staff saw this over the weekend through the bye, but somebody needs to talk to Mr. Stevens, because that's not how you play football. That's not what being a Cougs about. And really, that's choosing the easy way as opposed to choosing hard. Choosing hard there is, you know what? I'm not going to look at this kid. I'm not going to think about him. I'm going to go up. I'm going to handle my job and my business. And he didn't. And you know what? The game isn't on Jack Stevens either. All right. It was horribly, horribly called game offensively in the second half, something that is becoming a theme of this season. You know, we've heard that Zevi has been banged up. And after that Toledo game, with the amount of hits that he took, I'm not surprised that Zevi was walking out of that week not feeling his best. But he's got six interceptions over the last three games, two in each game. And when we take a look at Louisiana Tech this week, this is a team that has 50 passes batted as opposed to WSU's 15 this year. This is a team that's better defensively than they are offensively. They can hang their hat on forcing teams. Connor, I think you have the stats, 68% of the time they're scoring in the red zone. So that's a pretty good 32% of holding your opponent to zero inside the red zone. And frankly, that doesn't set up well for Zevi Eckhouse, in my opinion, this week. a guy who has shown that he has not been able to control the football. And when we go back to the first couple weeks of the season, you know, Jackson Potter had the injury, or sorry, the interception concerns and turnover concerns. Everything that went wrong did go wrong in that North Texas game. But honestly, man, I think if we see another slow start from Zevi, and especially if there's a pick or two in the first half, I don't know how you don't make a change in the second half. I don't want to see it happen. I'd like to see Zevi finish this season out. But at the end of the day, I don't care about a player's reputation. I want to make a bowl. And whoever's going to give us the best opportunity to get into a bowl, that's who's going to need to be leading, you know, the quarterback room. But
yeah, like Jimmy said, this isn't the YMCA.
Yeah, it's not. But Jimmy did say yesterday in his press conference that Zevi's going to play. He's feeling better. We don't know what the injury was, but he's obviously banged up. You know, this is a must-win game. I mean, you have two home games left on the schedule. James Madison sandwiched in between this Louisiana Tech home game and Oregon State. And when you're taking a look at the bowl route, it's winning this week and hopefully home serving against Oregon State, because that James Madison game is not going to be easy. Number 24 now in the AP poll. At least the Cougs maybe have another shot at a top 25 victory before the season ends. But this is going to be an interesting game to watch of what the coaching staff is going to do if we continue to see the offense sputter.
And the last that we'll talk about Oregon State before we get into, you know, the investment with the new stadium, some of the NIL stuff is Washington State also 10 penalties this past game for 90 yards total. They were 2-15 on third down. Again, two turnovers, both were Zevi interceptions. The first one, as you know, you and I were talking back and forth, it was essentially a punt on third down into their territory. But I don't know if you saw the Puck tweet this week. There was a someone that went through all of the highlights from this game and showing all of the open reads that Zevi was missing throughout the game. And like, for example, on that first play, that first interception, he decided to throw it deep into double coverage instead of hitting the over or the across route where it's wide open. The guy would have had a first down. So just, you know, still a lot of room to work with and to progress, but it's got to happen right now.
Well, and you know, another big thing is the injuries. I mean, like, you cannot afford to have any other offensive linemen go down. You're playing without Christian Hilborn. Brock Doe goes down last week. He's probable to play. They still don't know about Christian. He's going to go through, you know, his weekly practice and see if he can go. But I think more realistic timetable is Oregon State for him dealing with a knee issue. And you know, you've got guys playing all over the place. Johnny Lester going from guard to tackle. You know, that's the big thing, is if you can get these guys back, now you can move Lester back inside, and all of a sudden your guard depth is much better, because Jalen Caldwell out again. And just to kind of give you guys an update from yesterday's press conference on, you know, who's expected to go and who's expected not to, Coach Rogers was pretty transparent with, you know, the multitude of injury reports that Jamie Vinnick of Cook Van asked. Quick injury updates: defensive end Ram Stevenson, probable. That's good news. Mike Sanjo, still expected to be out. Defensive tackle. Tight end Hudson Cedarland's probable. Wide receiver Leighton Smithson, active. He missed the OSU game with a family emergency. Coach Rogers didn't divulge too much into that. Leo Pulasi, questionable. Jalen Caldwell out. Caden Beattie out. So still some significant injuries on both sides of the trenches, and here's Jimmy Rogers talking about the injuries.
The sheer amount of injuries you guys have experienced this year.
Never experienced this much in my life.
I was going to ask if you had dealt with something similar.
No, it's unique, and it's just kind of how you handle it. But I think the preaching of next man up, the next man up mentality, I know that's so cliche, but if we don't all look at our preparation seriously, like, I could get in the game, you know, you're leaving something to chance in some sense. So to take it all serious and to be locked in to the details of how things are done, regardless of you potentially getting one rep to 50 reps, it all matters. And for the most part, I don't think there's been, especially on defense, when we've had guys hurt, the next guy steps up. There's a certain level of energy and focus that goes into it, and spirit in which you believe in yourself at too, right? You can't walk into a game and not believe in yourself and expect to have success. So I've been proud of some of the guys that have stepped into additional reps or bigger roles because, yeah, they put in a lot of work. And we need to just stay healthy the rest of the way because I don't know how many more injuries we can maintain and still be competitive.
Yeah, and at the end there, I mean, that was the biggest piece. I don't know how many injuries we can continue to sustain and stay competitive. And realistically, he's talking about the offensive line here, in my opinion, because you lose Hilborn, you lose Doe, you lose Caldwell. Noah Dunham's a little bit banged up. I mean, that's where we get back to the Cougar Collective. I mean, you know, we'll jump into this. You know, our president basically said we are last in the new Pac-12 and NIL, which is ridiculous to hear that a Utah State, a Fresno State, a Texas State has more to work with than us and our 255,000 living alums. And we still cannot get folks to the NIL watering hole. This is where it comes. This is where we see the issue with our roster. We can't retain all these offensive linemen. We can't retain these defensive linemen. These guys are going for 5, 6, 7 figures in NIL. So, like we said, do your part. Join the Cougar Collective, 1890 Club. Folks aren't asking for a lot. Just be a part of the mighty by many here.
And this is the QR code to actually go join the collective. This is where they're trying to drive people to. And if you enter Cougs on the Couch, where it states the referred by, that would help us out. It's a little competition between some of the creators and people that are pushing people to the collective. But join the 1890 Club if you're not already. I'm going to get into some more information on what exactly was said. But I personally have adjusted my donation from $18.90 to $30 a month. And at some point when I'm able to, I want to increase it to $50 a month because, like, the people that are passionate, if you are fired up on a Saturday because you know that it's Cougar Football Saturday, you have to be in the 1890, ideally donating more because we have to all chip in as much as we possibly can comfortably to be able to put the best product on the field. And, you know, like Betsy Cantwell said, WCU Athletics must raise around $20 million per year to compete in the new Pac-12. This is at a Cougs First show in Spokane this past week. And as you mentioned, she stated, right now, we're at the bottom of every team coming into the pack for football and NIL. We're at the bottom. And she also said, we must be winners. We must, in football, within 4 years, sit atop the Pac-12, because that is the time that every single media rights contract across all of college football, every conference, is up for grabs again. And essentially, you know, we have to push and be as good as we can heading into the next great realignment in college athletics.
Well, and, you know, we take a look at what we're seeing next year. I mean, there's not really a clear-cut team that I look going into next offseason that's like, you know what? Yeah, hey, they're going to handle the Pac-12 in its inaugural season. Like, Boise State's got some issues. They're not disciplined this year. Maddox Madsen's not it. Let's be honest here. They're going to need to find another quarterback. You start Maddox next season, I'm feeling pretty good about our chances against Boise State. Fresno State has looked pretty good year one under Matt Entz, and that is a spot in California. When Fresno State is good, they show out. That's a 40,000-seat stadium. That is the biggest stadium in the Pac-12. You had a report earlier today that former Colorado State quarterback Cordell Stewart, legendary Steeler, expected to throw his hat in the ring for the Colorado State job. He's already assembled a coaching staff filled with veteran NFL guys and college guys. So we'll see what that needle looks like for Colorado State moving forward. They've also been tied to the Montana head coach, Bobby Huck, who's got Montana looking fantastic this season at the FCS level. So when you take a look at these teams and what they are next year, there's not a clear-cut team. I mean, you know, you take a look at Oregon State. They spent $1.5 million on their quarterback. It didn't work, but they did it. So something's got to be done. And, you know, you mentioned the $20 million. Well, that's $20 million that they're not getting anymore from the Pac-12. You know, you had $30 million a year in media distributions. That's down to what, $10 million, we're hoping? $15 at the most? Still haven't had the full information on the media package, but there's a lot to talk about.
And that $20 million number is in total for all of WCU Athletics. She didn't break it down specifically, but this is from a Cougar Fan article. Again, shout out to CougarFan.com. Make sure to subscribe to their premium membership for all things WCU Athletics. This is directly where I'm getting this information. But the assumption with people that are close to the NIL and revenue sharing believe that about $10 million would be going towards football, $5 million would be going towards men's basketball. And by reaching those numbers, that would put Washington State in a position to consistently compete for titles in the new Pac-12. And breaking it down into some of the numbers, you mentioned 250,000 living alumni. If we look at $20 million, what exactly does that break down to? Well, that would be 10,000 donors giving $2,000 each, 40,000 donors giving $500 each, or 88,000 donors giving $1,890 per month, which if you join the $1,890 club, that's $227 per year. If you join, you know, for $30 a month, that's $360 a year. That's something that, you know, should be just a part of what you're doing. It's like you go out, you buy your Old Crimson Lager, then you donate to the collective, something like that. They have a QR code on the cans even to where you could just scan the QR code, sign up. If you have a friend that you're sitting there watching a game with, get them to sign up. If you have, like, there's no excuse to not be signed up for the $1,890 club. It's $20 a month.
And let us know in the comments if you're somebody that doesn't want to do it. Why? Like, let us know why.
And then reply to yourself and state that that excuse is not a righteous excuse. This article also adds that, you know, Betsy also stated that talking about where WC Athletics currently is, her stance, her and her standing behind Coach Rogers and what she believes he can bring. And then also she states that young men want to be with Coach Rogers. They're taking less NIL deals to stay with Jimmy Rogers, but we can't just bank on that for the long term. We have to give him as much resources as we can.
Yeah. And you know, that was another reason why, you know, he was a guy to bring in here is because of his retention ability. And we saw what he was able to bring in here this season. I mean, gosh, you know, if we don't have a lot of these SDSU guys, where are we? You know, we might be a 3-win team this year, 4-win team this season. And, you know, granted, at the outset of the year, this has been very up and down. So folks have had, you know, opinions that are wide ranging, whether they go from Jimmy Rogers is not it to, oh, now we're in a 2-3 game win streak. We've looked better against UW. We almost beat Virginia. We almost beat Ole Miss. Everybody's feeling good about themselves. Well, you know what? Now's the time to donate, because this past week, I can guarantee you during the bye week, much of it, GM Ricky, head coach Jimmy Rogers, the rest of the staff, retention, re-recruiting your own players. That's where we're at right now. They're spending their bye week trying to get guys to stay in Pullman. And, you know, I've seen a few folks, you know, like Tampering Tony online. You know, he gets into a little tiff. If Jimmy Rogers isn't gone, or if this isn't happening, I'm rescinding my 1890. Dude, don't be like that. All right. Like, get real. Okay. Please.
Yeah. And then on the same light. Okay. First off, if you haven't scanned this QR code yet and joined, here it is again, just pull out your phone, scan that, sign up. With that being said, let's talk about the other big news is the $12 million investment, talking about the new technology upgrades in the stadium. We're talking LED light board, scoreboard, sound system. The second, it's going to be two phases. That's the first phase. The second phase is going to be new field turf. About $7 million is projected to go towards the technological upgrades, which leaves about $5 million for the field and other stuff. I want to hear your opinion, Dylan, because when you came back from the Boise game last year with all the fancy lights and all this stuff, you're like, why don't we have this at Washington State? We've got to have this. So what are your thoughts?
Well, here are my thoughts. I did say that. And it is a bit hypocritical. But also when you had three beers in me pregame and we're seeing how it, here's the difference though. Boise State, they've got everything already aligned in their program, NIL backing. They're the only show in town in terms of being in Boise, Idaho. So they've got corporate sponsors. They've got a lot of corporate help on their end as well. Something that we really don't have, other than when we were possibly being able to keep John Mateer and we were able to get the Spokane casinos involved in that. But where's the continued partnership in that? Is it only when we have a John Mateer on our roster? And in the end, $1.5 million is not going to do anything when Tennessee, Oklahoma, and LSU are pitted up against you. I just look at the numbers. Like, yes, stuff has to change, but at the end of the day, like, if you're not winning, nobody's showing up just because you've got a light show to start the game and some crimson and gray smoke. Like, I want us to have a roster first. I want us to get into an echelon of the Pac-12 where we have money going to our NIL or money going to revenue sharing and not asking private donors for LED lights in these amenities. I just think we need to win first before we get to that. And Adam Lewis, a contributor for CougFan.com, this is what he said. I'm glad WSU has been able to raise money, but I feel like this should be going to NIL until we can actually retain our rosters in football and men's basketball. Nobody will care about flashing LED lights if you're not competing for championships. Double-edged sword. There's truth to both sides. Adam's side, and you know, I'm guessing you're going to play devil's advocate here, you know, for the university side.
First off, this is good news that something is being upgraded that has been needing to be upgraded. And secondly, both can be done at the same time. How do we know that some other donations and stuff are being lined up for NIL? And what I've heard is that the argument of, hey, some private donor wants their name to be a part of the scoreboard type thing. It's on something, a structure. Whereas if they donated that to NIL, and that's ego stuff, which I don't agree with if that's the case. But with that being said, you know, like I mentioned with you, it's like fancy lights, the experience, maybe more fans start showing up. Maybe that does help with player retention when they go to a game that's packed out, sold out Apple Cup, and it's flashing and all this stuff. But upgrades are good in general. I mean, also just note that Pullman Radio is the one that had released some of this information, and they've already secured $1.3 million in donations for this project. $4.2 million in pledges have been secured, and another $2.5 million must be pinned down by December 15th in order for this new technology to be in place for the 2026 season. And I will side with you also a bit, because we have heard from sources that they need the collective. They need people to start really chipping in more than we have, because like Betsy said, we're in last place out of the new Pac-12 in NIL fundraising right now, which should not be a thing. And if these investments are pulling away from the money going towards NIL, then obviously that's a bad thing, but you got to take what you can and just hope that the NIL push is going to be there as well in the same light.
Well, you know, having the game day experience is something, but at the end of the day, like, if it's coming, if that's like a main like cog and saying, hey, this is going to be our way to keep players here on campus, this and that, that's fool's gold. Like, Kapenna Gushikin is a third stringer at Ole Miss, but because of revenue sharing, he's making good money. Like, that's where we're seeing, like, the P4, they're just able to first, second, third string, revenue share, everybody's getting paid, everybody's happy. You're going to have certain guys that are going to go, well, you know what? No, I need to play. Like, I could care less about making an extra 20K here. I want to be on the field. Like, at the end of the day, when Texas Tech, SEC schools, Big Ten schools are coming in after your top line guys, like, oh, well, you know what? God, the lights here were fantastic. I just love how we go into the field. That's not doing anything. Money talks. Okay. And we have not been talking with our Benjamins lately. So that's something that's got to change. We're just trying to put in a mass media effort with the Cougar Collective right now and with NIL in general, because, you know, at the end of the day, you know, a lot of folks still might not know where to go, what the fight is in college athletics right now. And, you know, you probably have a lot of folks that are like, I don't want to pay kids. Well, you know, head coaches are getting $8 million a year, you know? So until we have some sort of referendum on how much head coaches can make, because that money should go back into, you know, that's what a collective bargaining agreement is for these things, so that coaches cannot make too much money, because all of this money needs to stay in a circle here. We need to have the money allocated to players in a better way, less money for these coaches. I mean, that's what I would do if I could play commissioner for one day.
And the last thing that I'll say before we get into the preview of Louisiana Tech is that this Cougar Fan article also states that there is a direct correlation between athletics success to applications, enrollment, faculty recruitment, and broader university fundraising. The more that Washington State athletics and the football team is on the national spotlight, the more people are going to want to go to Pullman for their degree, for to join Washington State, to be a part of the alumni base.
I'm one of those. I was a junior college transfer from Southern California. Mike Leach, head coach, Washington State. That's pretty cool. Okay, hey, he's just starting up his tenure here. Get up to Washington State. Oh, wow. Hey, look at the Murrow College. There's a lot to like up here. That does happen. There, like, that's not a joke. The better your football team is, the more applications you're going to get, the more people are going to want to go to your school. I mean, gosh, you know, the Gardner Minshew year. How many people wanted to go to WSU after watching Gardner play for a year? So, yeah, I mean, there's truth into that.
Here it is one more time. Go ahead and scan that. Join up. And with that, let's get into the preview of Louisiana Tech. So the 5-4 Louisiana Tech Bulldogs are heading to Pullman, Washington. It is yet again the first matchup or meetup between these two universities. Washington State has been adding new opponents across the entire schedule this year. Washington State 4-5, Bulldogs 5-4. Currently, the line is Washington State by 7.5. The over-under is 44.5. And some things to note is that Louisiana Tech, we already kind of talked a little bit about what to expect. We don't know who's going to be playing at quarterback for the most part. They have a decent running attack. Their defense is really the standout when looking at their strengths of the schedule. But their head coach is actually 3-21 so far in his tenure on the road, which is notable. Head coach is Sonny Cumbie, who is actually a Mike Leach disciple in every sense of the word, as Cougar Fan states. Cumbie played 20 games for Leach as a quarterback at Texas Tech and spent the 2009 season under Leach as a graduate assistant. They run a spread offense. They are 50th in the country on the ground per game, 171.7 yards per game on the ground. They're 100th in the nation through the air, 194.4 yards per game. Looking at this matchup, what are your initial takeaways, thoughts?
Well, you know, earlier this week, and, you know, we talk about it with the Louisiana Tech writer here later in the show, number one quarterback who wasn't the starter at the outset of the season, but took the reins after the LSU game. It was announced yesterday that he's going to be out for the season. So in their 25-24 loss to Delaware last week, you had the second string and the third stringer mixing in. So we don't really know who exactly is going to be the starter yet. The Louisiana Tech writer said one of the quarterbacks is, you know, if we expect to see him in the game, Louisiana Tech's going to throw the ball a bit more. But, you know, I think they're going to have kind of the same game plan that WSU's offense has going into a Virginia or an Ole Miss game where, hey, we don't have our number one at QB. We're going to need to control the clock and run the football to try and stay in this game late. But 3-21 on the road, my goodness, that is not great. And then the other aspect for our gamblers here, please gamble responsibly. They just traveled to Delaware cross country, back to Louisiana Tech, now traveling cross country to Washington State, 3-21 on the road. Boy, that 7.5 looks juicy this weekend. Maybe by the half point down. So you have it at 7, but.
And this is really looking at the schedule. This is another should be an auto win for the Cougs.
That's we looked at
last week. That was a game that they absolutely should have won. Like this is another game, especially at home. Washington State has played very well at home. This is their second to last home game. Then they're at James Madison after this week, then versus Oregon State to finish off the year. They need another two wins to become bowl eligible. So this has to be one. You have to assume Oregon State at home is going to be number two. We'll see what happens at James Madison, but they absolutely have to take care of business.
James Madison, too, just entered the AP poll. And the big thing this year is that the College Football Playoff Committee is not even looking at the AP poll anymore. They're not taking anything from it. But still, hey, you have an opportunity possibly if James Madison can handle business these next 2 weeks, for another top 25 victory. And how great would that be in year one of Jimmy Rogers if you can finally get that top 25 victory? And, you know, a program-changing victory is winning at Ole Miss. You know, I'd say it's on par with Virginia as well. But when we're talking like name, brand, Lane Kiffin, SEC, that is a program-changing win. Virginia number 14 now, but if you can leave with going 1-2 against the top 25 year one, 75 new players, bunch of FCS guys, you know, I think you take that as a dub. You know, there's still an opportunity to finish this year 7-5. 6-6 though is right there. You know, get into the New Mexico Bowl, Independence Bowl, maybe an LA Bowl, whatever it might be. Just the ability to have those extra practices in another game, it's so big for the program going forward. And especially when you take a look at, you know, like guys like Sullivan, Slim Jim, you know, Allison, you know, a lot of the true freshman players, that's where it is big time to get these practices and to just get them more reps going into next year, because you're losing a lot of senior leadership, you know, from these SDSU guys. I mean, you're going to lose Cale Reeder, Tucker Large, Humphreys. You're losing a significant Jamori Colson. I mean, the secondary, that is something. Good news though. Defensive tackle Max Balloon. Jimmy Rogers said yesterday in his press conference that he expects to get a seventh year. So we'll have a seventh year player next year.
We'll save the rest of the preview for when we have Ben on. We might also have M. Christo. We'll keep you posted. But Dylan, let's talk some basketball.
Whew, man. First two games, not pretty. I mean, they didn't have a lead for a single second against Idaho or at Davidson. And, you know, the big issue coming into the season was like, who is your guy? Who's the guy when the shot clock is down to 5-6 that is going to create something for you when nothing is there? Last year, you had Nate Calmise. You had Lawan Watts. You had Cedric Coward for 5 or 6 games. I'm not going to really put Isaiah Watts into that conversation, but he is what we call a microwave guy that can, you know, put in 9-10 points for you in a 5-minute span because of his 3-point ability. And you lose a lot of scoring last year. And the other aspect is, you know, like guys like Dane Erickstrup, Ethan Price, Coward, Watts, I mean, they all played in Riley's system for 3 years. So, you know, one thing he mentioned in his press conference after the win against St. Thomas, 81-71, was that he may have been asking too much of this group, because he kind of put it into terms of like, hey, when I had Dane, when I had Lawan, when I had Cedric, these guys know the system. They've been in the system for 2 to 3 years, where I could put that much on their plate. So I thought it was a fantastic played game from them in the first half and maybe, you know, the first 10 minutes of the second half. And then there were some concerns where a 22-24 point lead went to a 10-point lead. So it's like, that's where I'm looking at the future of this schedule, where you're in a close game, you're up 5 or 6 points over the last 5 to 6 minutes. Can they close the team out? And the way they closed out St. Thomas didn't impress me, but Adria Rodriguez, transfer point guard from Spain, only getting 1 year with him, he was very hesitant in the first couple games. I think he only had, I don't even think he attempted more than 3 shots in this first game. And he's a guy that you could tell opposing teams, they're marking him up like, hey, he can't shoot. Give him room. So his ability to drive the basketball and create pressure at the rim, that's what we're going to need to see. At 9 points, 5 assists, 4 rebounds, a couple turnovers late in the first half. He had 0 turnovers in the first, 3 in the second. Tomas Thrasterson, fantastic game. You know, if he can hit, you know, start hitting threes at that clip from the outside, that's going to open things up. Rahard Bavers, you know, 17 minutes, 7 points. He's a guy that is maybe your Isaiah Watts this year, your microwave man, because we know we're not going to get a lot defensively from Rahard's, but, you know, can he come in and make a couple outside shots? But, you know, they got the win this weekend, Apple Cup against UW. Danny Sprinkle coming in. It's not going to be an easy game. UW's roster is anywhere from $5 to $10 million. They had one of the best off seasons in terms of recruiting. So this is going to set up for the rest of the non-conference schedule, because when you take a look at WSU, I believe they go out to Maui the week after this. No. So they'll have a home game against Southern Utah, and then they'll take off November 24th. They'll have their first round matchup against Chaminade. And that Maui Invitational is going to be something to watch. But let's get into a little bit of David Riley on Adria Rodriguez and his performance.
It's really important that we have multiple guys that can make plays for us. And I felt like he, in the first couple of games, it's different. You know, he's played at a really high level, but for whatever reason, there's some differences in college basketball, and it just took him a second to get used to. And I think he showed more confidence tonight. And, you know, a lot of these guys, like, the way we develop players, we're trying to get them to do things they haven't shown before. And so in the fall, you'll see in the early fall, these guys make a ton of mistakes and we get them fixed and they go through all this process in a couple months. And then it's almost like they start back over when the games start and the lights go on, the things get magnified a little bit. And so all these guys, the same mistakes they were making August, you know, 20th or whatever, when we first started practice or first got the guys here in September, that's the same mistakes you're seeing early on in the games. And I think they should be getting those cleared up. And he's looked like a hell of a player all fall. Like Thomas has shown a lot of the stuff he showed tonight all fall. These guys are starting to look like more of themselves.
You know, the bigger thing was rebound and turnovers. The rebounding was fantastic on Monday night. Out rebounded 36-19, six offensive rebounds. The Tommies had zero, but the turnovers, 15 turnovers, I believe 16 in game two against Davidson. And, you know, hey, with the five out system with Coach Riley, like their turnovers are going to happen, right? But it's keeping it from double digits, the 12, the 15 plus. You're not going to win games like that. They're going to have to stick anywhere from 7 to 10 turnovers a game. Turnovers are going to happen with this five out offense. So a lot to work on. And really, like, I think we're going to see what this team has on Friday at home. Hopefully a good crowd for the Apple Cup. But yeah, big one this Friday for the Cougs.
So preseason, Dylan required that I watch 5 basketball games because I'm not a big basketball guy. That has now reduced to just the Apple Cup game this weekend and then also the Maui Invitational. But my Cougar Collective donation is a general donation. It's not just a football. So that's my contribution. But
maybe the extra $12 goes to basketball, $18 goes to football. Who knows?
My part. You know,
we'll figure it out. But I will say this, Connor, I will add games if this team figures it out and makes me want to hit you up and say, hey, brother, I'm going to need you to watch this USC game on December 14th.
No, they're playing. Okay. Yeah. They're playing USC.
Yeah, they're playing at SC. I'll be at that one. Looking forward to seeing the Cougs in SoCal. But hey, got to watch the Maui Invitational, regardless of where we're at. We get the cookie game against Chaminade. Don't lose that one. They're not a Division I program. They are the hosting school of the Maui Invitational. Now every other year, they're in the bracket. So I don't know if that was the Maui going, hey, Cougs, get your easy one, and we'll see who you get in the second round. But you have USC, Boise State. There's some good schools that are involved in this Maui Invitational. So always a fun one when you're around the family and watching college basketball and Turkey Day football and Black Friday football, right?
And with that, let's get into our preview of Louisiana Tech and some of the interviews. But before we do, make sure to check out CougFan.com, subscribe to their premium membership for all things WCU Athletic. As we've just hammered on you guys, join the Cougar Collective, $18.90 at least a month. If you're thinking of buying, selling, or refinancing in the next year, reach out to myself, Connor Webb, licensed in Washington, Oregon, California, Idaho, and Arizona. As a mortgage lender, you can visit LeonardConnorWebb.com to reach out and get in touch. And Dylan?
Yeah, when you figure out your mortgage situation with Connor, give me a call. We'll lock in a energy bill for you for the next 25 years so the good old power company doesn't do it for you.
And with that, let's get into our first interview with Ben Carlisle.
We have another edition of Coug Fan TV presented by the Couch GM podcast. None other than Ben Carlisle joining us from Bleed Tech Blue, owner and publisher of their On3 Rivals site for Louisiana Tech Bulldogs. Traveling west, 3/4 of the way into the country. Not a normal road trip this weekend for Louisiana Tech. You guys come in 5-4, but some questions at the quarterback position. I know you'll go into that with us, but what's it like to come out west for a deep non-conference game?
Yeah, you know, I think at the G5 level, sometimes you take these non-conference games, especially late in the season. There's a number of times in which they are a money game. But, you know, when Washington State, when this game was added to the schedule, I believe it was sometime back in 2024, I know it was a game that Louisiana Tech fans were excited for. I'm not saying that they're about to bring, you know, 1,000 fans out to Pullman, but there are a number that are coming out there. Excited to see that area of the country. I think from a team perspective, it's a little bit different. You know, last week they're on the road at Delaware. This week they go to the opposite side of the country at Washington State. It'll be a tall task, you know, with the travel alone. But it'll be interesting to see. I know, like I said, I think a lot of folks are excited for this non-conference game, though.
What's the weather down in Louisiana right now?
Today, it's about 56 and sunny. So, okay. It's a little bit colder.
Yeah. This weekend, it's going to be 44 at Washington State and Pullman. It gets really chilly out there. I was curious going from the South to the Pacific Northwest, if there was going to be a big shock factor for them.
Yeah. I do think there will be a difference weather-wise. Our cold's probably a little bit different, but it has gotten colder here the last couple of days. Now towards the remainder of the week, I think it's going to be 75, 80 degrees. So,
okay.
It will be a bit of a change. And then I've seen that there's a chance of rain as well. So that could throw another element into things too.
Mm-hmm. And then Ben, you're a former Louisiana Tech alum for the baseball program. Where do we see you? Where do we see you on the diamond during your playing days?
Yeah. So I was a left-handed pitcher from 2011 to 2014. You know, ironically enough, Tech was in the Western Athletic Conference back in those days. So we had a lot of trips. Played in Hawaii, San Jose State, New Mexico State, Nevada. So we went to that area of the country a whole lot back in those days.
Yeah, I'm sure those Hawaii trips were fun. But, you know, jumping into the quarterback situation, Blake Baker, your starting quarterback went down this week. It was announced that he's not going to return this season. You had two other quarterbacks in the mix last week against Delaware. What can we expect? Have they named a starter, or is it going to be kind of we'll see when the Louisiana Tech gets on the field?
Well, you know, first off to Baker, you know, at the outset of the season, he wasn't the starter. He was the backup. Trey Kukoc was the starter. He started the first two games against Southeastern and LSU, and didn't go that well. You know, Baker came in late in that LSU game, led a touchdown drive, and they went with him going forward against New Mexico State up until last week against Delaware. And Kukoc played a little bit. Evan Bullock, who we saw last week as well, he played some against Kennesaw State and against Delaware. Tech's had injuries at the quarterback position, you know, dating all the way back to 2020. They haven't had a starter start the entirety of a season for that long now. And so Baker just adds to a long line of guys that, you know, haven't made it throughout the season. It's a huge loss. I don't know that I would say he's the best player on the offense, but he's the most important player. I think Clay Tevin and at running back's your most talented playmaker, but Baker's your most important player. And, you know, that leads into this week. I don't know that it necessarily matters who starts when it comes to Evan Bullock or Trey Kukoc. I think they'll play both guys. Bullock's more of a pocket guy. He's not going to move around a whole lot. But in my opinion, he's clearly the better thrower. Kukoc's more of a runner, adds that element to an offense that he can get outside the pocket and do some things. But he suffered a shoulder injury in week three, I believe it was, against New Mexico State. And really, this past weekend against Delaware, he had three attempts. He completed all three for 66 yards. So they weren't long throws down the field. But that was the first time to me that he's looked fully healthy. So we'll see both those guys this weekend. I think the challenge for Tech is just how do you put together a game plan with two quarterbacks that are so drastically different, but almost to the point where, you know, if Bullock comes into the game, you know, Washington State will know that you're likely to throw the football.
The Bulldogs have had a solid rushing attack so far this year, ranking 50th in the country so far in rushing yards per game with 171.7. Can you walk us through that combo of Clay Tevenin and Amir Wiggins and what they bring to the table?
You know, I would say this about the run game. I think that when you look at the overall statistics, I'm not saying Tech's not an effective run team, but they can be a bit of fool's gold. They ran for over 300 yards against New Mexico State. They ran for 425 yards against Sam Houston State. So, like, those two games alone do skew the statistics a bit. But Tevenin's good. He's a really good player. And I think coming into the year, we didn't necessarily know what Tech would have at running back beyond O'Mary Wiggins. He was the leading rusher a season ago. But Tevin's added some juice to that backfield. He's a guy that if he gets into the open field, he can go the distance. And he had two really impressive touchdown runs last week against Delaware. And I would imagine going into this week against Washington State with all the uncertainty at the quarterback position, there's going to be a focus trying to get him and Wiggins, you know, a combined, you know, 35, maybe 40 touches. That's just going to be Tech's best avenue when it comes to being successful offensively. But they're two really good backs. Like I said, Tevenin's a little bit of a home run hitter. Wiggins is more of your guy that – not that Tevenin can't run between the tackles. He certainly can. But Wiggins can get those hard-earned yards between the tackles. And I think this offensive line, they're just so inconsistent. And it's week to week. I feel like – and I don't want to take away from New Mexico State and Sam Houston State, but when you look at Tech's three wins in conference play – you add UTEP into there as well. Their three wins in conference play, the combined record in conference for those teams are 2-14. They've really taken advantage of some lesser opponents like they should, but when they've played the upper echelon teams within Conference USA, they haven't had quite as much success offensively. So it'll be interesting to see how they fare. And I haven't watched a whole lot of Washington State this year, but looking at their defensive numbers, it looks like it's going to be a challenge to run the football.
Yeah, Washington State, if you take out the 259-point performances against North Texas and UW, they've been averaging 10 points per game as a scoring defense since then. You know, Coach Rogers in his media availability yesterday mentioned Eli Finley, tight end for Louisiana Tech. He said he thinks it might be one of the better tight ends, complete tight ends, especially receiving the football, that they'll see all year. Take us through Eli and some of the other wideouts.
Yeah, I think Eli Finley, a tight end, I think coming into the year, the expectations were really high for him. And, you know, expectations at a tight end position in this era of college football, I don't know. You know, when you hear high expectations, what does that mean? Does it mean 40, 45 catches? Does it mean 65 or 70? He's probably more of a 40, 45 catch guy. I think the area that he's improved the most from his sophomore to his junior year is just inline blocking. He's really embraced that role under new offensive coordinator Tony Franklin. He's done a good job with it. I think in the passing game, if he's going to be a guy, you know, he had over 100 yards receiving against Southern Miss earlier this year. A lot of that was due to the scheme. He's got to be a guy that schemed open. He's not going to wow you with some of his athletic traits. And so we'll see. I think that it varies week to week as far as how involved he is. You look at the Delaware game last week, he had three catches for 11 yards. So it just really depends. As far as some of the wide receivers go, Devin Gandy's a kid. He's a California kid, 6 foot, 175 pounds. Played the first 4 years of his career at Sacramento State. He's a guy that they try to get the ball to vertically down the field. He's not the biggest kid in the world. So when he gets into some 50-50 spots, he can have some issues. Marlon Jackson does some good things as a junior wide receiver. I think he's the most complete pass catcher that they have. He'll play in the slot. He's a bigger slot at 6'2", 210, 215 pounds. But it kind of varies week to week. And really, when you hear me say varies week to week, this offense is just a roller coaster. It's up and down, up and down. And so when you think that you figured out a playmaker like at Clay Tevenin, and you're like, all right, that guy should get 20 carries this week. Well, then the following week he'll get 8 carries. It just varies week to week. But I would say Gandy, Marlon Jackson are probably your two main guys at wide receiver as far as who they try to get the football to?
It's certainly been a roller coaster for Washington State throughout the season as well, so we can definitely relate to that. But talking to a bit of the head coach, Sonny Cumbie, you know, he actually played 20 games for Mike Leach as quarterback at Texas Tech, spent the 2009 season coaching under Leach as a graduate assistant. But it seems the struggle for him so far in his tenure has been games on the road, currently 3-21 on the road. You know, what does he bring to the table and what have you seen from his time so far?
Yeah, you know, really the entirety of his tenure has been, I guess, a struggle is the best way to put it. You know, he's 16-30 overall. He's 12-30 against Division I or FBS competition. You mentioned some of the road struggles, 3-21 on the road. It's just, and for whatever reason, and this year is a little bit different than last year. You know, last year they lost so many one-score games, and this year they've played 2 one-score games. They lost both of them. They made some vital mistakes in both those games to lose them. But this year, you know, the offense has been really good when they've been at home. They've been dreadful when they've been on the road. And the defense is kind of a role reversal of that. They've been a little bit better at when they've been on the road. They've struggled when they've been at home. And I don't know. It hasn't made a whole lot of sense to folks in Ruston. You know, you hire an offensive guy with an offensive pedigree, spent some time at TCU, spent some time, like you said, at Texas Tech, was a great QB in his own right. Over his 4 years, they've played 3 quarterbacks in a game 6 times. That's more road games than they've won. So they've just had such a difficult time figuring out that quarterback position, and it's led to the offense being stuck in neutral for, you know, a majority of his tenure outside of some one-offs in some given years.
You know, conference realignment has affected both of our fan bases. Louisiana Tech, I mean, you guys know conference realignment well. You're all over the place
they in do.
The
last yes.
15, 20 years. You know, Texas State, they decide to accept the Pac-12 offer. They start up next year. And with that spot being left in the Sun Belt open, Louisiana Tech jumps in. How does the fan base and I guess the overall athletic department feel about getting back into the Sun Belt?
Yeah, I think everybody's really excited, you know, and I think it goes beyond, you know, the Sun Belt's had a little bit of an uptick, obviously, in football the last few years. Yeah. I think that plays a role, but I think the bigger role is you get back to playing ULM, which is a longtime rival. Those two schools haven't played in football, I don't know, since like 98, 99. They're 30 minutes down the road. So getting back into a conference with them. Southern Miss, which, you know, Tech had a series, you know, a home-and-home agreement that started this year that they were planning to play. They've been longtime rivals. UL Lafayette, Arkansas State. Tech shared some conferences with some of those schools in the past. But I think getting back to some of those regional rivalries where, you know, fans can make a road trip. Conference USA has become so disjointed. The closest road trip right now is probably Sam Houston State, and that's, you know, 5-6 hours. It's not that close from that perspective. Western Kentucky has been a great team that Tech's kind of developed into some rivalries with over the years, but you can't travel to that game. It's a 10 or 12 hour road trip by the time you hop in the car, and then you start talking about Delaware, Missouri State. It's just become so disjointed, and some of that's due to some of the teams that you lose, and you're not that attractive as far as adding, so you're left adding FCS call-ups. But it's been a great move for Louisiana Tech. Obviously, football is the focal point of conference realignment, but Tech's developed a really good baseball program here over the last 6 or 7 years. I know they're excited to get in the Sun Belt from that perspective as well.
Now, we've covered the offense for the Bulldogs. Let's talk about the defense a bit. They're actually 18th in scoring defense so far this year, 18.9 points per game. On average, and surprising stat is the defense has broken up 53 passes compared to Washington State has broken up 15 passes, a massive difference. And Louisiana Tech is 72nd nationally in total defensive yards, but in the red zone, it seems that they're one of the best in the country. They're fourth in the country, not allowing opponents to score 32% of the time once they get in that red zone. So what have you seen from the defense?
Yeah, that's where they're good at. You talk red zone defense, you talk forcing turnovers. That's kind of where they've thrived under first-year defensive coordinator Luke Olson. You know, a year ago, Jeremiah Johnson was here. Tech had hired him from Northern Iowa. He's now at Coastal Carolina. he brought with him a 3-3-5 scheme, and that scheme was really effective. But at the same time, honestly, when I look at the numbers, it reminds me a lot of Washington State. Like, they just didn't allow yards. It isn't that they forced a ton of turnovers or did any of that. They didn't wow you, but they just stoned you. They didn't allow points. And so this year, Luke Olsen comes from Jacksonville State, where he was with Rich Rod a season ago, and they've been turning teams over at an alarming rate. And I say alarming, it's 15, 16 turnovers this year, but of the 16 turnovers, they've returned 7 of them for touchdowns. And so that's been a huge key, and that number leads the country. That's been a huge key as far as why they're 5-4. I mean, you go back to Southern Miss, they probably don't win that game without a pick six. I know the final score was 30-20, but the pick six in the second quarter really changed the trajectory of that game. They get 2 defensive touchdowns in the fourth quarter of a win at UTEP. They've come at some opportune times, and that's been the real key for them. That 3-3-5 scheme's been really difficult, but you mentioned they will allow yards. They've allowed some yards in some different spots this year, but they've been able to buckle down in the red zone. They did a good job of that last week against Delaware, forcing 3 field goals in the red zone, but you know, ultimately they made some mistakes late in that game that cost them. But they've been a fun unit to watch. They do some different things. Luke Olsen likes to blitz a lot. At the same time, he'll drop 8 into coverage. I think when you're talking about where they do struggle, I think when they drop 8, they have some issues. They just don't get hardly any pressure. Whether they're blitzing or dropping 8, they don't get a ton of pressure on the quarterback. And so that causes some issues at times, but they're a really fun defensive unit to watch.
Yeah, and that's something our quarterback has struggled with over the last 3 weeks, 2 interceptions each game, 6 picks over the last 3. Taking care of the football has backed up this offense significantly at times. So Zebby's been a little bit banged up. Our coach on Monday said that he is expected to play. But you know, when you take a look, both teams, one's 4-5, one's 5-4, getting to a bowl, so significant for programs nowadays, especially in this NIL era, just to have those extra practices and an extra game. 7.5 point line this week, Ben. What is your expectation? Do you expect Louisiana Tech to come in and cover? Or I guess this is my long-winded way of asking you a score.
Here's my take on it. I posted this at Bleed Tech Blue yesterday, and I'm looking at it from Louisiana Tech's perspective. They went to Delaware last week. That's a cross-country trip. They come back home. They'll take another cross-country trip up to Washington State on Saturday. You throw into the consideration that Washington State's coming off a bye. Louisiana Tech's playing with a backup quarterback, or you know, second and third string quarterbacks. Tech's also 3-21 on the road in their last 24. You look at some of the results that Washington State has had in terms of home games. They've played really well at home. You know, they beat Toledo 28-7. That's a Toledo team that blew out Western Kentucky. Western Kentucky won in Ruston with a backup freshman quarterback making his first career start. So you can look at all these different things, and I just don't know how Tech wins this football game. And I think if they do find themselves in a tight game in the fourth quarter, it's because they found a way to run the football. But when you look at Washington State's run defense numbers, I don't know how they do it. I just don't see it. We have our show tomorrow night. I was thinking about a score prediction. I'll say something like, I think Tech's defense does hold up pretty well. I think ultimately they probably get worn down in the fourth quarter. I'll say Washington State 24, Tech 6, something like that.
So
probably
so
not a pretty football game.
So you're telling me Louisiana Tech is going to cover after saying all those things. That's what I'm
probably
reading.
It's
going to be an interesting one. 4-5 WSU at 5-4, or sorry, at home against 5-4 Louisiana Tech. You know, I look at the other score. You guys beat Sam Houston State 55-14. WSU could barely put 7 points on the board against Oregon State, who lost to Sam Houston State. And when you take a look at those stats, you know, they had 300 more yards of total offense than Sam Houston State. They basically just said, here, take this win. We don't want it. But Ben, where can we take a look at your work. I know you have a, you know, radio program as well as, you know, you're the owner and publisher.
Yeah, BleedTechBlue.com. Like you said, we're a member of the On3 Network, joined up with them back in July. So BleedTechBlue.com, it's only $11.99 a month. We'll have a lot of content out throughout the week. Did a piece this morning. We have one of our writers put out a piece about the difference in field position for both Louisiana Tech and Washington State, and how that can play such a huge key in a football game. But we have a radio show tomorrow night, Sports Talk 97.7, 6 to 7:30. I know you'll be on with us, Dylan, helping us preview Washington State. Have the podcast after that as well. So come check us out. We got a lot of good content over at BleedTechBlue.com.
Beautiful. We're going to have to get Ben on the travel adult baseball roster here too. So don't tell me you're lefty, man. We're going to get you on the mound.
I don't know Connor, how much left in the tank, but I'd be
Connor, anything else?
No, appreciate you coming on, Ben.
Absolutely, guys. I appreciate y'all.
Jumping in with MK, quick segment. MK, man, last week, 10-7 loss at Oregon State, you know, something all of us didn't see. And when you take a look at Oregon State, their last victory against a Division I program was against us last season. They only won this year's against us. You know, Zevi looked a little bit beat up. Coach Rogers this weekend said he's expecting to play. He was a little beat up last weekend, 15 carries against Toledo before that Oregon State game. But, you know, what did you see in that game offensively that was disconcerting going into this week?
Yeah, I think the number one thing I was thinking about was, you know, Coach Akey, I played for him. He's one of the best coaches I've ever had, and I played with some great Hall of Fame coaches. He just knows how to get the absolute best out of you. So, you know, before the game, I talked to, you know, a couple radio stations down there in Corvallis, a couple in Oregon, and they were just asking us, like, they're like, we don't know a lot about him. You know, and I was like, well, I'll give you the down and dirty about it. I mean, Coach Akey is that guy. So, you know, I knew he was going to have people, you know, coming out with their ears pinned back. We made some players look like they were all Americans that really weren't, unfortunately. But I will say that I knew he was going to blitz. He was going to mix up the defense. He was going to confuse our offense, you know, and Zeb being a newer starting quarterback in that position. There's no way, you know, you can ask more of a defense to hold a team to 10 points with giving up two interceptions. There's nothing more a defense can do for you. Like, they've done it all for you. But to go down to a Corvallis, a 2-7 team, well, a 1-7 team at the time, and score 7 points is just, it's unacceptable for Washington State. It's just unacceptable. So, you know, whether Zebby's banged up or not, there was just decisions that were made that were just like, what are we watching right now? You know? So, you know, I feel like there's a ton to clean up this week, and I feel like we will. But it was just so unfortunate because that was a winnable game that we needed to really end out the year.
Yeah. You know, 4-5, 3 games left, got to get 2 to get to bowl eligibility. Luckily you have 2 games at home. You have this one against Louisiana Tech, 7.5-point favorites. Louisiana Tech coming into this game banged up, basically their number one for the majority of the year, just announced out for the season. So Tech writer we talked to still doesn't have a great expectation on who's going to be the guy to come out and signal call. But, you know, a couple of the things from last week, when you take a look at the third down efficiency, 2 for 12 on third down, they were 6 for 12 against Toledo, 0 for 1 on fourth. And then the penalties, 10 penalties for 90 yards. And, you know, a lot of them are pre-snap penalties, all starts. You know, as a staff, how do you get that out of your play week 9, week 10 in the year where, you know, season's almost over?
Yeah. And I still put that back on Zeb because, you know, the stat that really is concerning is 6 sacks. You can't win a game with 6 sacks out there. 6 sacks, 2 interceptions is just brutal. So, you know, as a quarterback, you definitely want to make sure that you're stepping up, being a leader. And in I expect Zeb to say, yo, that one was on me big time, because, you know, there was plays that were receivers were open. You know, we put up 100 on the ground, which, you know, coach really has been really driving that home, that we want to be a run team, control the clock, things like that. But 6 sacks, and it wasn't all the offensive line. There was times that Zeb could have thrown the ball away, done certain things, and he just didn't, unfortunately.
And just picking back off of Zev, I mean, two interceptions in each game, the last three, yeah. You know, obviously a little bit banged up, but now we're at the point where it's like, you've got to get to a bowl. You've got to have the younger guys able to get these extra practices throughout the year. That's the most important thing. I could, you know, give two shits about a win or a loss in a bowl game. It's let's get extra practices going. At what point do you start looking over your shoulder for a Jackson Potter? Because the reason I'm going to bring this up is at the beginning of the year, the running game just was not there. And we've seen the run game now be a stable thing, I can say, for the Cougs over the last 3 to 4 weeks. Now that you do have that run game going a bit more, I mean, at what point do you make a change if it comes to that aspect? Is it if a couple quick turnovers, if, you know, 3-4 drives, 3 and outs? Like, are we at a point where we're now maybe looking over the shoulder?
Yeah, well, Jackson Potter's not the answer, unfortunately. And I say that respectfully, but you also have to look at the game within the game. The reason why the run game is opening up is because defenses have to respect Zev. What he can do on the field with his legs is you have to respect. So you have somebody spying him so that you don't have somebody coming down in the box being able to defend that run. You can't run certain stunts and things like that, because if you do, he's going to open up that gap and get a big gash on you. So the reason why the run game is open is because Zevy's at quarterback.
Okay. Last thing for Morgan State. I showed you this at the end of the game. Britton Ranford, you know, great Coug, formerly of Coug Center, posted a video of an Oregon State fan just going after Jack Stevens. And essentially what he said was, is like, hey, he was in his ear the whole game. You know, I'm 100% confident that this kid in front of me played a significant role in the Beavs winning. Dude yelled at our kicker for 4 quarters, telling him to miss a kick. You know, our kicker spent more time chatting back and forth with this kid than he did kicking into the net. Mr. Stevens was definitely thinking about Connor in section 129 when he stepped up for that chip shot. Now, granted, hey, everything before that, you know, the play call, the empty look, you know, not staying in the middle of the field, ending up on the right hash, that's here or there. But as a former player, I'm sure you've heard plenty of things from from fans. Is it concerning that no teammates, coaching staff heard this, and even just for Jack Stevens to get involved in this?
Yeah, and I'll tell you right now, Oregon State's not a great place to play. Like, when you talk about fans, I mean, I've been berated. That's probably one of my top 10 places I was berated by fans. Like, they know they're close. They know exactly how to yell and get under your skin. And I had plenty of fans yell whatever at me at Oregon State. So I know where he's coming from. The hard part is, as a player, as an athlete on that sideline, you literally have guys that come to that game just to do that, right? Mm-hmm. And you got to know that. And it's like, you know, be a pro, you know, act like you've been there before type of situation. Have I talked back to stands every once in a while? Yeah. But to sit there for 4 quarters and just take that and chip back and forth is nonsense. And to be honest with you, as a kicker, 99% of what you're doing is mental. You know, you got to think about shooting a free throw with 1 second left in the game. You probably saw thousands and thousands of free throws that are easy, but all of a sudden in your head, like, oh, let me switch something at the last second, right? Or let me hit this and then run over and yell in this guy's face that I hit it, right? So all these things that you're thinking in your head that you shouldn't have when it was just a routine chip shot, that's the thing that sucks. And that guy, I bet you 99% got into his head. Absolutely got into his head. It just sucks that he sat there and taken it and engaged in it.
You know, over the last three games of the season, obviously two home games here, Dad's weekend, you've also got James Madison, who has now entered the AP top 25. So you might have another opportunity at a top 25 victory year one with Coach Rogers. But I mean, at this point, is it basically just take care of business at home, get to the bowl, and whatever happens in Virginia happens?
Yeah. I mean, it's all going to come down on this quarterback play. We have to score points. This defense has shown week in and week out that they can play great defense. They can stop the pass. They can stop the run. They can get a turnovers. They can get the ball back to the offense. We have not shown that we can strike up the band and really put points on the board. And I think right now, specifically this week with Latte, I think we can put points up it's going to come down to what Zeb does, because everything runs through QB1. Everything, right? The play setups. You got to think about this. The game within the game. Always say that. So you might have this reverse pass that you're waiting to run. It's all about the setup. You might have this, you know, off tackle play that you really want to run into something else, or maybe a run pass option that you're throwing that deep ball. But unless you set it up properly, you can't run that play. And I bet you there's a bunch of plays that coach has just sitting there that didn't get to get ran because he wasn't able to set it up, because we weren't able to get the first down and continue a drive and get down there and get points, you know, and you'll see this too. So you guys ever notice when at the end of the game, you know, we're down and we're running a hurry up offense and we're just milking the defense and just slicing and dicing them all the way down? You're in a different mode than if you get more first downs and you're playing with a little bit of the lead or whatever, right? So we have to make sure we're putting our offense is putting our team in the right situation that we can run specific plays, that we can play a whole game versus, you know, situationally, if that makes sense.
Do you think for a lot of folks, I mean, you get a lot of folks that have been frustrated with Danny Freund and the offense and even Zevi over the last 3-4 weeks, but as a year one signal caller, like, granted, there's been some things that I haven't agreed with, but at the end of the day, when you don't truly really have a quarterback that fits the overall identity of your offense and this and that, I mean, is there a little bit to say, hey, like, he deserves a bit of a pass with what he has to utilize offensively? Yeah.
I mean, you got John Mateer in there. It's a different story, right? So, I mean, 100%, it's there. Everything has to fit in a sound offense that he's running right now, or play calling. And you've seen Zeb, like, there are people wide open and he misses them. And, you know, Jackson Potter the same way, wide open passes and misses them. And it's just like that one first down could have changed the whole drive. Right? Or set up a play that, because remember, it's one play is setting up the third and fourth play, right? So being able to not get that first down you were planning on, then you have to scramble, like, okay, wait, let's audible and let's go with this play, right? So it's just, I'm seeing that there's openings there for Zeb to really open up. The decision-making, I've questioned, right? He's got all the tools. He's got an arm. He's got the legs. He's got the intangibles. It's the decision-making process that's really hurting us right now, because Jackson Potter, he can throw the ball, but the immobility of him in the pocket just makes him one-dimensional, that he doesn't have the decision-making and arm to be that guy to take you to the next level. Great quarterback, but not that guy, if that makes sense.
7.5-point favorite this week against Louisiana Tech. That game starts at 3:00 on the CW. What is your score prediction? Cougs cover? Good teams win. Great teams cover.
Yeah, I honestly, right now, I'm going to take the cover for the Cougs, but it's one of those things with Washington State. It's just a light switch, and we've seen it. And you just don't know when they're going to come turn it on or off. But I love what the defense is doing. I have a very, very, very good feeling that defense is going to hold this team to 7 points. I have a very good feeling about it. What is the offense going to come and show up and do?
There you have it. Well, MK, always appreciate you jumping on with us. Connor was in diaper duty right now. So we were the two-man show. 3:00 PM this Saturday, Louisiana Tech 5-4 enters the Palouse for the first time ever.
Man,
the 4-5 Cougs.
My plane is fixed. If the plan works out the way the plan works out, your boy might fly the plane all the way to the Palouse. And all I'm saying is, I don't think we've lost a game I've flown to. I'm just going to throw that out there. So if people want me to fly there, I'm going to need you to get a couple of retweets on this.
Hey, we're going to throw that up on the socials, retweet it, get MK to the Palouse. Also, 3-21 on the road. Louisiana Tech is under their current head coach's tenure. 3-21.
I like that.
Take it as you want it. So appreciate it, MK, and we'll see you next week.
Appreciate you, brother. Go Cougs.
Go Cougs.